This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to all our listeners around the world and in the U.S. You're listening to the show that which interviews baseball's best coaching minds who loves to challenge the status quo. And I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Thanks for joining us on the show today. Do we have a guest for you today? Yes, we do. We've got a great one and we're looking forward to it. Before we start, remember, do us a favor and check out all our social media, Baseball Out on Twitter. We're all over Facebook and also on Instagram. If you can't forward that to everybody, we'd love for as many people, you know, as you can, so that way we can get the show out there. It would really help us. So thanks a lot, everybody, for joining, and we're going to get started pretty soon. Today's show will bring you a young man who I believe hosts one of the better youth baseball instructional podcasts anywhere in the world. And it says youth, but actually, you know, a lot of coaches at many levels can listen to it. I've listened to over 118 episodes. Now, let me tell you, the podcast has over 300,000 downloads. It was ranked the number one amateur baseball podcast on iTunes. Hit the top 10 podcasts, the entire amateur sports category in iTunes. What an accomplishment. I was so impressed by this young man that guess what? I brought him on the show. I want everybody to know about him because he's got a great show, got great information, and you're about to hear him. Let me tell you something. The reason I love him is because he not only has a great podcast, he's an average person who just loves and has a passion for the game. But on his podcast, he asks some great questions. He's got great guests. He challenges traditional thinking, so he fits in perfect with Baseball Outside the Box. He brings up new ideas in every podcast. He's organized. He's passionate. And he just loves helping coaches. And there's unbelievable reviews that he has on his iTunes and his Stitcher. So many coaches have given him some of the best reviews that I've ever seen. So you can go to his website. It's youthbaseballedge.com. His Twitter, Edgy Baseball. That's E-D-G-Y Baseball. He is Rob Tong, from the host of the Youth Baseball Edge podcast. What's up, Rob? How you doing, buddy?
Pete, it is an honor and a privilege to be here. Thanks so much.
Well, I'll tell you what, first of all, I got to thank you again for having me on your show. But, you know, I know I've been trying to get you on the show for a little bit. You've got a lot going on. You've got a great podcast. You do a great job. I know you do everything, production, marketing, you name it. I love your website. That's why we're going to put it on the show notes. You've got some great guests. So not only do you give personal information, that's very good. And I know I'm a lot older than you are. So when I say he's young, it's only because I'm a lot older. He's got a lot of great information. You know, I love the guests you have on. So I'm excited about the show. I think it's going to be great because what we're going to do, folks, is we're going to talk about coaching in general, because I'm going to pick Rob's brain about what he has learned in the last 118 episodes. Now, don't worry. We're not going over every episode, but we're going to see what he's learned when it comes to coaching. What's different out there that coaches can learn from that they really need to know about and understand? He's had, you know, some great guests like Alan Yeager, Tim Corbin, Justin Stone, Kai Carrera, you know, Ron Wolford, Austin Wasserman, you know, Jeff Passan. I mean, he's had a ton of guys, and it just keeps going on the list. So, hey, Rob, let's do this. I mentioned a little bit about the podcast. I know there's something, obviously, you want to tell the folks in the U.S. and around the world about why you started the podcast. I know they can go to your website, youthbaseballedge.com. But go ahead and tell them a little bit about why you started it and what it's really all about.
Well, when I first started coaching, the league that I was in was, they held coaching clinics for whoever coaches wanted to attend. And so they had these different clinics for different age levels. And I went to the one that was for 5 and 6 year olds. And that was the clinic that started after the 7 and 8 year olds had just ended. So I was just starting out as a coach, brand new coach. This was like, you know, over 14 years ago. And when I got there a little bit before the clinic was supposed to start for the 5 and 6 year olds. So the 7 and 8 year old clinic was just wrapping up. And the guy who was doing the 7 and 8 year old clinic, He was from a prominent high school baseball team, and he was teaching the coaches how to teach hitting. And he said to make sure the kids were doing squish the bug with the back foot. And so I didn't know any better. And so I said, oh, that's good to know. So I started taking notes. And then the 7 and 8 year old clinic finished, and then the 5 and 6 year old clinic got started. And it was taught by a different guy who happened to be Justin Stone. And so he got up in front to do his clinic. And one of the first things he said was, do not teach squish the bug. That's not what big league hitters do. And so again, I was like, oh, that's good to know. But now I'm confused. I'm like, well, which one is right? They were saying like completely contradictory things, and they were teaching their coaches contradictory things. So if you only heard the one guy, you'd go back to your team and teach your team squish the bug, which is obviously wrong. And I didn't know that at the time until Justin Stone just walked in like a few seconds later and said, well, that's wrong. And so I got really bothered that there's all this misinformation out there. And it's pretty important to me to make sure that you get your information from a reliable source. And so ever since then, I wanted to do something that would help separate that misinformation from the true information about coaching youth baseball. I wanted to spread the word as far as possible so that other coaches wouldn't go down the wrong path and, you know, unwittingly do their kids a disservice by teaching them the wrong things. Now, that was back like in 2005, 2006, and I didn't have any time to do anything back then. So then fast forward 10 years later, I got laid off. And aside from looking for a new job, I decided that this was my chance to finally do something. I finally had the time to help do that thing that would help separate misinformation from true information about coaching youth baseball. And so podcasts hadn't taken off yet at that point, but I'd heard about it and I thought, well, this would be a cool way to do it. So that's how the podcast got started. And, you know, it was basically just trying to help coaches separate misinformation from true information about coaching youth baseball. Basically the same premise as you, because you and I, we think the same way. We want to get rid of all the old bad stuff. We want to see what is smarter and better, and share that with everybody that is willing to hear. And so I'm so glad to have a same mind as you in this business.
Well, thank you, Rob. And I'll tell you what, you know, misinformation, I love that, because there is a lot of misinformation out there. You know, and one thing that you've learned a lot also from coaching young kids. You still coach young kids. I believe you still coach your kids yourself, your own kids. So tell us about that experience a little bit and what you're doing on the coaching level.
So I'm currently coaching one kid who's 13 years old. He's on a select team. And I'm also coaching a 9-year-old on a rec team. And I have a high school senior who's playing on his own team. And I also have an 11-year-old who's playing on his own team. Like, I'm not coaching those two kids. And so I've been coaching since, you know, 2005, 2006, all the way up through now. And, you know, every year you learn something different. And it's really amazing to be able to see the progress of not just your own kids, but the other kids that you coach, and to see them develop and what works and what doesn't. And, you know, that's why we do these things, is to be able to teach more efficiently, because who's got time to try to research what's the best thing out there when we have other great people who are smarter than us, who can share all that knowledge with us. And that's why I lean on these guests, and that's why you lean on, you know, guests as well, to help us, you know, learn what's outside the box, what's misinformation. And, you know, some of the things that I learned in practices, for example, was to do random situational training. And I've seen lots of practice plans by lots of people, and none of them talk about doing situational training in any of them. That's not to say that I invented it, because there are other coaches that I know who do it. They just don't, you know, promote it out there. But it is few. There aren't that many people who do situational practice every practice. And so this is where every practice, usually I do this at the end of my practices, where I have all my players get out on the field, assume a defense, take a defensive position, and then the rest of the players who are left over, they become base runners. And I'll have a base runner at home. He's like acting like a batter, and the other players, I'll just randomize, you know, put them on different bases. I'll call it the number of outs, and I'll either hit the ball or I'll throw the ball out there onto the field, and the defense has to react and make the play. And if they don't, then, you know, I'll tell the team briefly what they could have done better. And if it was like, if it was an all out disaster and it's complete chaos, then I'll call the whole team in and we'll talk about it a little more. And I keep score. So if the defense either makes the play they're supposed to make, or they keep the lead runner to the minimum on the number of bases, then they get a point. And if there's a runner that takes an extra base, they get a point. And so in the end, we find out who's the winner and we tally up the points by the offense and the defense. And it, I like that it makes the players think on every play. And if you do it enough, because you should be doing this in every practice, or at least I do, it ingrains in the kids, start anticipating where should their play be before the ball is put in play. And because it's random, it's also challenging and not boring. So these are the things that I kind of pick up along the way as I'm coaching my kids. And, you know, I think that's how we all are. We all kind of pick up things along the way and we keep the best stuff and we toss out the not so good stuff.
Hey, Rob, it sounds like, you know, misinformation is something you're obviously targeting on your show and making sure that you're trying to get the best information out there. Listening to you, if I was to ask you the question, you know, what was something that coaches struggle with a lot and how can they, you know, become better at it? It sounds like practice organization. Now, leave me and tell me what you
Absolutely.
Think.
Absolutely. Practice organization is the number one thing that I get asked about. And it's really challenging for a lot of these dads, these coaches who are trying to do the right thing for their kids, but because that's not their full-time job, they're not full-time coaches. They have day jobs, and then, you know, when their day job's over, they take their team out to a practice. They're like, well, what do I do now? Like, I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to do. And so, you know, that practice planning is very important for a lot of them. They just don't have the time to, or the experience to know what they should be doing. And especially if they don't have a whole lot of volunteers to help out, you know, that makes it even harder. You know, you have 12, 15 kids that you're trying to teach. Some high school coaches, they have rosters like 22, 25 players deep, and it's just him or maybe him and one other guy. And so these people have lots of struggles with practice planning. So yeah, that's definitely a big concern of a lot of people.
You know, with today's technology, there's so much information out there. Now, you mentioned that on the show, that there's so much information. How do you filter through it? How do we know that it's the right information to use? For coaches out there, what do you do when, okay, you just went to the ABCA or you went to a local convention, and like you said, you listen to a speaker, and he's a pretty, you know, important speaker, well-known around the world, well-known in the U.S., and you learn from that individual something new, but yet it's contradictory to what you've been teaching your kids. When you go back to your team, how do you explain this to your kids that you're making that change?
That's a great question. So to me, it's just as simple as explaining, you know what? What I've been teaching you before was okay, but now I found something better. It's going to make you more efficient. It's going to make you better in this X, Y, and Z way. And so I'm hoping that you're going to join in the challenge of trying to learn this new thing. And I think kids, they adapt easily and they understand when you explain it to them. It's better if you do explain it to them rather than just start teaching the new thing. And now they're like, well, what happened? We used to be doing it this way. So definitely Communication is a big part of helping everything go smoother. And it's good for your relationship with your players anyway, so that just like you explain things to them, hopefully if they have things that they are not sure about, like they can have the confidence to come up and talk to you and you're having that kind of open communication. So hopefully we all are going to be transparent in everything that we teach, and we should be explaining everything, why we do these things, so that the kids know why we're doing them. And then if we learn something different that's better, then we can explain why it's better. And then that's hopefully going to be a much easier buy-in on their part.
Absolutely. And if we're not willing to change, then how can we ask them to change? I'll tell you what, I like that. And I think it's important for coaches, because of the fact that's something I know they struggle with at times, because they come to a convention, they learn something, then they go, wow, how am I going to go back and do that? So thank you for clarifying that. I think that's a good way to put it. When you talk about your practice, you know, what do you recommend the coaches prior to their first practice, since we're on practice right now? Prior to that first practice, what do you recommend them doing that would assist them in in making their practices better. Now, whether that's lesson plans, but also, you know, anything else that will help them not only run their practices, but educate their parents and players a little bit better prior to the season, prior to their practice.
Well, it depends on how much commitment you're going to get from your team. So the easiest way to do this is to do two things. The first is to have a parent meeting before the season, and you're going to explain what you're going to be doing and how much help you're going to need. And so when the parents know up front that you need help, they are probably going to be more willing to help than if you just showed up and they're not sure. I've been on teams where I wasn't sure if the coach wanted me out there, if he thought he could handle it on his own, and I didn't bother to ask. Sometimes I would ask and they would say, yeah, I'm okay. And so then I feel like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have asked because maybe he felt offended or something like that. So it's better to always, again, communicate. Yeah. And through a parent meeting, you can communicate with your parents and let them know, I need everyone on deck to help share the load. And the more hands that we can have helping out, the fewer kids we have standing around, and that's just going to benefit everybody. And then the other thing I would suggest is have a kind of pre-season, pre-first practice meeting, and you're just going to evaluate where they are at that point in the season. So you may have returning kids who you have an idea of how they were last year, but maybe over the off season they got better. And so you'd like to see where they are. And so it's better to evaluate everybody, including the new players, how they're doing before you start. So that way you can plan, okay, well, these kids need work on this. These other kids need this work on that. And that can kind of give you a baseline of how to plan, where to start from for the rest of the season.
You know, and I know it's a general question, but I think we could approach it in a different way somehow. Prioritizing what you're going to do in practice. Now, I realize it could be different. There's different ages. I know high school, youth level, in-house, travel teams. But a general idea on how would you prioritize what you're going to be covering in practice and why would you cover those things first before you did anything else?
You know, I've always been such a big fan of Kai Correa and how he handles fundamentals in such a nuanced way so that these are the things that he's teaching to, like, you know, he was teaching them to D1 players and now he's teaching them to minor league prospects. And, you know, I think that's a good model to follow. So for me, you know, I look at Kai and I say, well, if he's doing that with his kids, quote kids, then I would take that with my kids. And I would also do, I would start with a progression, and Kai likes to do progressions, and that's what I would like to do as well, is to start with something simple and then build up on top of that. Each practice we add something different, something new, and add to that base. But you do it in stages so that you don't throw everything all at once. You don't do it scatterbrained so that you're doing all these different disparate elements that don't connect and then hope that the kid will figure it out and connect them all on their own. And so progressions are really, to me, the way to go. It's the easy way to do any kind of practice planning for an entire season, is to start with each area from fielding to hitting to pitching and throwing and base running and situational team defense, all of these things, and progress from the start all the way through the season. And it's also easy to see where each player is as they go through and where they need more help, where you need to slow down, where you need to speed up and go on to the next thing. So I think that I'm not sure if progressions work for everybody, but they work really well for the teams that I've been coaching with.
Is there something that you focus on more than other things, and why?
I tend to focus more on hitting and pitching just because I feel like that is what the bulk of the game is, hitting and pitching. And if you can pitch well and if you can hit well, those things happen so much more than defense and base running. Now, of course, defense is very important because there are going to be times you're not going to be able to strike everybody out and the ball is going to be put in play. You have to make those plays. So that doesn't mean that you're going to skip anything. But if I were to prioritize things, I would prioritize the kind of following the Pareto principle or the 80-20 rule, going after the things that happen the most in a game And every play always starts with a pitcher and always starts with a hitter.
Yeah, I really like that because of the fact that, like, the key word there you said was, you know, that happens in a game the most. You know, and maybe I can start prioritizing according to what happens in a game most, because they only have so much practice time you're allotted, depending on what level. Now, I know that you believe in fundamentals, but, you know, I also know that on your website you had listed where it said in the past, coaches who only taught the fundamentals were the gold standard. Unfortunately, those days are long gone. I want you to explain the importance of that, because then we're going to get to what you called random training or training for game situations. Explain that part first.
Well, you know, Pete, the game itself has not changed, but the various aspects that surround the game has changed a lot. And so if you don't teach those other aspects and teach kind of a more holistic view of baseball, you're not going to be as prepared and your kids are not going to be as prepared as if you were to teach them to see the big picture. So for example, when you and I were growing up, there were no travel teams. Now there's travel teams, select teams, there's weekly tournaments, there's playoffs and all that stuff. And the competitive level has gone up with it. And the stress has gone up with it. And so now there's a much higher mental game element involved. And so coaches need to know how to incorporate the mental game into their coaching repertoire. And then there's technology, which you talked about a little bit before. Technology is getting better. We're able to target elements of the game with it, things like attack angle in the swing. And we're also seeing things where we can improve our vision through vision training. And you know that, Pete, because you've had guests on your show talk about vision training and the importance of it. And I've had guests on my show also talk about vision training, pitch recognition. Those kinds of things are things that are outside the commonly thought areas of fundamentals. Then there's other things like game strategy, practice planning, which we talked about, strength training, helping kids handle adversity, developing relationship with your players. These are all like super important aspects of coaching that has nothing to do with teaching fundamentals. And that's not to say that fundamentals are not important. Obviously, fundamentals are very important. That's why they're called fundamentals. But if coaches are only focusing on fundamentals, they're missing this wide spectrum of important things that their kids should know. And if we're looking at players in colleges, like D1 colleges and then minor leagues, like I mentioned before, like Kai Correa, he's Billy Boyer. These guys are like teaching the fundamentals, but teaching them at high levels to these adults, basically. Why can't we also do the same thing, but also add in these other areas that I was talking about that make the complete picture? And so it makes me sad when I hear coaches say, you know, I don't need to learn anything new because I know how to coach baseball. And when people don't want to know, they don't want to grow, because the game is complex and we're always learning. And that's why you do this podcast. And that's why Jerry Weinstein, when he's at the ABCA convention, he's sitting in the front row and he's taking notes, even though he probably knows more than 90% of the people at the convention, because you've got to keep learning and you got to keep growing. And the game is more than just the fundamentals.
Absolutely. Well said, man. I really like that. Hey, you know, we're talking about game situations, and, you know, I think that's like you said earlier, critical when it comes to practice organization. It's because the hardest thing when I was younger, I wish I knew, you know, back then what I know now, because of the fact that when it comes to game situations, you know, we practiced them, but we didn't really, you know, we just practiced them in general. We didn't really put them under pressure. Explain, you know, give us a couple ideas on game situations, how you would take one part of the game, one small part, and develop it into a real situation.
So one thing I like to do is I like to have kids pitch to each other in practices instead of coaches pitching, because it's more realistic. It's more what they're going to see. And it also helps develop your pitchers at the same time. But for the batters, we can put them in situations that are going to challenge their mental game and challenge the way they face adversity. So we can start them off with an 0-2 count or a 1-2 count and see how they deal with that. And we can also do the same thing if we want to target the opposite and start them off with a 3-0 count or a 3-1 count. How do they handle that kind of situation? How does the pitcher handle those situations? And these are the things where we put them in game-like situations and we're keeping track of how they succeed or fail, quote unquote fail, because everything is for gearing them up for the game. And the more that they see these things and experience them in practice, then the less stress it will feel like in a game because they've seen it before, they've experienced it before. And if you add the stakes higher in practice, then it won't be so new to them, so foreign to them in a game. So those are some of the things we do. We also like add base runners. We might start off with runners on second and third, for example, for a pitcher, and start them off with a 3-0 count. How do they handle that? And we like to see for not just the advanced pitchers, but also for the not so advanced pitchers, they generally don't feel the pressure as much, but you get to see how they respond, and maybe they do. And you might see something that you didn't notice before when you put them in situations that you don't normally see, because sometimes you don't normally put a weaker skilled pitcher in a real game, so you don't have any idea. But if they're mental makeup is really strong, that's something you can work with. And that's something that you would want to know so that you can work with these players and know where their strengths are and where their weaknesses are.
You know, I strongly believe there's a place for travel teams. There's a place for showcases, but I also believe that both of them, and again, I'm not trying to blame anybody, but both situations can also hinder some development. And then I'll give you an example. I want you to explain why you think this happens. You know, I see a lot of young people who are in a ball game, and whether they could be with me, they're traveling overseas. There's a lot of adversity overseas, or it could be a local club playing here. You see a young person fail and they can't deal with that failure. What do you relate that to in general?
Well, the travel teams and the showcases, those are definitely high pressure situations. There's a lot more at stake. They're trying to impress people who they think are going to get them to the next level. And if you're going overseas, you could have some element of that as well. You're trying to impress the other country that you are playing against, and so that you don't look like, you know, you're not as good as them, but at least you're kind of competitive with them. I think it also borrows from how our kids' tendencies are in general, whether they have a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. And I think that us as coaches, we can help work in that area, try to help stop the fixed mindset, and fixed mindset being, you know, I don't want to do something too difficult because then I'm going to look bad. And if I look bad, then no one's going to think highly of me. And then I'm going to be really sad and I'm not going to have confidence, as opposed to a growth mindset where it's okay if I fail because I'm just going to get back up and I'm going to try to, you know, do it even better next time. And a lot of that just starts at home. Home literally being the parents with the parents, but obviously we can't control what the parents are doing in their homes. But in our own setting here, in our practices here in the States, or wherever we are, wherever we're working with our kids, whatever team we happen to be working with, we want to be able to put them in situations and gradually work them towards a growth mindset.
So is that something where in practice, so take your kids, you put them into heavy situations where they're going to fail, or the failure is higher, so that way once they get to the game, it's a little easier for them to deal with it if it happens, or possibly may not happen as much?
In controlled situations, I try to generally keep them at a 70% success rate. And there's some studies done by some other people. I can't quote them off the top of my head, but I have read them in books that says 70% mm-hmm. is a pretty good place to be. It gives them enough success where they stay confident, but it also has them fail enough where they don't get overconfident and they don't think that they're great at something that they're not. So I think that in controlled situations, in practices, doing drills, that's the kind of sweet spot we want to be in. In random situational areas, we leave it completely open, and they have a 50-50 ratio of getting it done well or not done well. And those, because it's random and it's live and there's no prep, they don't know what's going to happen, unlike most drills. This is where they get challenged more, and it's okay if it's not a 70% ratio, because it's still practice. And in the end, whatever happens in practice, those stats don't carry over into a game, but the experiences do. And that's where they can catalog that in their mind. This is what I did wrong in this. And hopefully they can grow with that and take that into the game.
Well said, man. Bunting. Let's take Bunny's situation. I'm curious about this. How do you, or it doesn't have to be Bunny, it could be any other situation you like, but I'm just going to use Bunny as an example. When you take, let's say you're introducing a bunt situation, what's the best way to introduce it to the players and to allow them to then practice it to be ready for a game?
Everything that players do, they should always practice first before they try it in a game. And they should practice it often enough that they have a pretty high success rate in practice before they do it. So bunting, for example, it's good to throw them using a machine, for example, in practice. Just chuck these things right down the middle and see if they can just do it on kind of what we call a happy path. We give you a pitch right down the middle. Can you bunt it? Can you bunt it well? Can you bunt it down the line? Not right back at the pitcher. And then we add some variability. We have like coach pitches. We have kid pitches. We have different types of pitches and different types of speeds and different types of locations. And if they can demonstrate some kind of ability there, then we'll let them do it in a game. And there's still this thing where you have to keep this constant and keep this where they're practicing it frequently, because I've had it just the other day, a situation where a kid bunted in a game. He bunted with two strikes, and this was the second time over the course of three games that he's bunted with two strikes, and both times he made an out. He felt confident doing it, but he hadn't actually practiced it that much in practice. But for whatever reason, he felt like he could do this. And I don't have a problem with him wanting to try it. But mm-hmm. I do want him to actually have the repetitions to demonstrate the ability to do it. And so this is kind of this fine line where we want to give the kids the freedom to be able to do things on their own, because that's where their creativity is. If he was successful, I would have said, oh, that was brilliant. Right, but because he failed, then that's where I say, oh, well, maybe you shouldn't be doing that. And it's too much outcome-based, in my opinion. So again, we're going back to doing the work and growing with it and doing lots of reps and progressing through situations, high-pressure situations in practice. Can you replicate it and then go forward in a game?
Rob, you talked about technology, and you know it's out there a lot. Give us an example. Give our audience in the U.S. and around the world an example how you utilize technology to help your coaching or help your team in certain parts of the game.
Well, technology was used to analyze video, and that's very low tech, but it's still technology, and you use the video on your smartphone to analyze pitching deliveries and to analyze swings. Now we have things like Blast Motion, and that's kind of newer technology where you don't have to use the video anymore to analyze. It can kind of analyze it for you. But not everyone can use a Blast Motion, and not everyone can afford one, maybe. There's other technology that I've used that I think is really, really helpful, and that's the radar. So there's a pocket radar, mm-hmm. ball coach, and that I use like all the time, because that helps me to see if they're what their velocities are at instead of me guessing. And then we can work on different things that they can try out in real time, see what the results are. Did their velocity go up? Did it go down? And kind of work from there. And now there's this smart version of that pocket radar where you can record it on your phone. So you can have video and the velocity recorded on the same video. And that's all like great technology, in my opinion, that you can use at every single practice, for not just for watching throwing pitching velocities, but also for measuring exit velocity and you can have competitions with throwing on the field for like defense and things like that. There's all kinds of different applications that you can use it in. And because you're measuring, the kids also get motivated to throw harder. Now you can tell them that wasn't as fast as the last one, as opposed to if you didn't have the pocket radar and this newer technology, just be from what you see and anecdotally, well, maybe it is, maybe it wasn't. They could argue back with you, well, I threw it as hard as I could. But now you have this objective tool that can show you. So these kinds of things I think are great. And I really, really like that pocket radar device.
You know, and today, obviously, you know, kids are brought up on technology and, you know, you're trying to keep their attention. So I think you said that really well because, you know, it keeps their attention. It keeps them motivated. You mentioned the radar, pocket radar, and, you know, that's something that could be used in hitting also. You said throwing, you said hitting. Explain the exit velocity. How do you use it with your kids on the exit velocity when it comes to hitting or anything else?
So we put the ball on a tee as kind of a baseline, and the ball is just sitting there, and then they swing, and then the pocket radar will pick up the velocity of the ball as it leaves, as if it was a pitch. And so we can time it that way. There are people who suggest that hitting a ball off a tee is not the same exit velocity as if you were to hit it live, and that's definitely true. So we also have kid pitch, we have coach pitch, we record the velocities off of that, and we're able to see how fast they're going. When the kids are pitching, the pocket radar will pick up two speeds. The first will be the pitch of the incoming, the velocity of the incoming pitch, and then the second reading will be the exit velocity. So you're always looking at the second number. If there is no second number, then the exit velocity was slower than the pitch speed coming in which case, you know, there's something to work on there. So that's how we work with it to use, to incorporate in our hitting.
All right. Well, you're listening to Rob Tong, the host of the Youth Baseball Edge podcast. I told you, and I'll keep telling you, you got to go to his podcast. I believe it's one of the best ever anywhere in the world. I don't care. I've listened to all the baseball podcasts. There's a lot of good ones, so don't get me wrong. I really love this one. He is a youth baseball coach, consultant, and training development leader. You can tell just by listening to him, man. This guy's sharp. I always keep thinking, man, I wish when I was Rob's age, I knew what he knows now, because I don't know where I'd be. Keep doing what you're doing, Rob. I encourage you because you're doing an awesome job. Listen, you know, I want to know, and I think the audience would like this too, you know, in your practices, you know, you mentioned certain things that you're doing. What do you do to keep it fun?
So that's kind of a sticky subject, because the most common thing that I hear about keeping things fun is competitive games. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of a little bit weird in the sense that I'm not as big in competitive games for drills, because I feel like the point of drills is for someone to practice their technique. And if they haven't actually learned the technique yet, then doing a competitive drill isn't going to help them. It's going to actually make them forget it faster, because they're more interested in doing it faster than the next person, and not necessarily if they're doing it right. So I have this weird belief that for me to keep things fun is more of keeping things challenging. And so I give the kids challenges to do. So, for example, if we are practicing ground balls, very simple, short to first, a frequent fun aspect of it would be typically to count the number of good throws to first, good field, good throw. And I'm more of, well, I don't know if you're fielding it right. I don't know if your form is right. I don't know if your footwork is right. So we start with slow and close. So we don't have them start from the shortstop position. We start them in between the pitcher's mound and the shortstop position. And we have them field a very slow moving ground ball. And I want to see their form. And then I've checked their form, and that's where I bring up points. And that's where I guess you can consider it competitive in a way, because we're adding points to that. But we're really looking at form first, and of course the throw. But we can also check on the tightness of their V in their throwing arm and all those kinds of things as well. And then once they start to do that and they have a high score, and usually I say like 7 out of 10 opportunities where they do it right. Then we back them up and we keep backing them up. And then when they have demonstrated proficiency, then we can go into the actual, you know, games of, okay, try to throw more good throws, field and throw, than the next guy, and the guy with the highest in 2 minutes wins or something like that. But before we get to that point, I want to make sure they're getting the actual skill correct. So for me, fun is more of challenging the player to do things the right way, and visually we can see whether they're progressing enough or not to get or not in order to get to the actual quote game part of
it. You ever worry about when practice is over that, hey, did these guys have fun? How do you tell? Is there a way to gauge it? Or through experience, have you, and, you know, because I know in the past I've always wondered, you know, have these guys had fun today? I hope so, because I want them to come back with enthusiasm.
Right. The easiest way for me, and this is very subjective, is when I tell them practice is over and I hear their reaction, aw.
There you go.
That's to me when I can tell that they're having fun. And if it's not, if it's something more of like excitement when practice is over, then okay, that wasn't very good.
What do you do for your kids to teach them discipline, organization? Is there, you know, something structurally that you do that, because I'm assuming those are two important things within your practice, within your teamwork?
When you say discipline, are you meaning discipline as in keeping after the same thing?
Or? Yeah, I think keeping it organized, keeping them moving all the time. Yeah, keeping them. Yeah, I think, yeah, probably more that I think coaches would be interested in.
Well, I tend to structure my practices where we have individual stations in the beginning, and then a base running, a team base running segment, and then team defense, maybe another round of individual skills, and then either random situations, or I might give them, quote, a treat and have them do a, you know, a controlled scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And so though that's kind of the structure that they've come to expect, generally speaking. And so keeping them organized is, I think, partly based on them knowing what to expect next and not changing things up too much, because then you have to do a lot of explaining, which takes a lot away from the actual repetitions and actually doing
it. Well said. I love that. And what about things like their equipment? Is there a system you use, you know, where the equipment goes, their gloves when they come in the dugout, you know, how to respect those things? Is there something you utilize to train them to understand all that?
Well, I'm kind of ashamed to admit I don't actually have a system for when they do that aspect of it. I used to have them put their helmets in the helmet rack or in the helmet, you know, bags or whatever we had in their dugouts, but I think for me, the most important thing is getting them on the field and getting to work with them. And so those other issues, I haven't had enough of a problem in order to create a system for that. Although I know John Wooden was really big in teaching, you know,
with
even
the socks. Yeah.
Doing the shoelaces. Yeah. So I definitely envy that. I just don't have the time to do and allocate to those kinds of things. And maybe, you know, that makes me a bad coach. I don't know. But I feel like, yeah, time is really limited. And
I think it's well said. To be honest with you, I think it's well said. And I think a sign of you hear it all the time, a sign of a very good leader, somebody who's willing to admit something that either they don't know as well, or maybe they're not doing, but maybe they don't need to do it either. But, you know, the good thing is I love that you're honest. And I think that's what makes your show very good. And I think that's why you're a good coach. I think that's why players respect you. And obviously the kids, you know, love playing for you. So I think you said that really well. I want to jump and you know, feel free if you wanted to add more, add whatever you like. But I did want to jump on coaching during games a little bit. You know, advice on what you do, because, you know, some coaches, I believe, tend to teach or talk too much during the game. How do you balance that and give us situations, you know, that you might do it in?
I'm definitely like you, Pete. I don't like to talk much in a game. And I feel like games are a test and practices are kind of like the school, the homework that they're supposed to be working on. And then when they get to the test, the teacher isn't supposed to come over and say, hey, you forgot to carry over the number. You know, the teacher says nothing and lets the kid work on his own and work it out. And so to me, I'm that way in a game. I don't say much. I might encourage them. So I'll, you know, tell them, hey, they're doing great. You know, they're pitching great. Keep it up. But I don't tell them to throw strikes. I don't give them, you know, mechanical cues. I don't do any of that stuff because I don't want to add to what they're already trying to work on mentally and process mentally. I want them to let the game come to them and work it out on their own. And if they have not so much success, then we can work on that in the next practice. But again, to me, a game is a test, and let's see what you got.
Love it. And is there anything you do or with your coaches, because I'm assuming you have some coaches helping, is there anything you do when they come in the dugout? Is there anything that coaches should be doing at that particular time, or is it just still staying pretty much quiet?
You know, I have this weird mentality that I like to connect with my kids. So every time they come in, I high-five every single one of them when they come into the dugout. And it might look a little odd, but it's my way of, you know, talking to them, saying something kind of, you know, encouraging as they're coming in. I try to remember something. If they did something on the field and they come in, I give them a high five and tell them, hey, good job doing X. And if they didn't do anything, hey, good job coming into the dugout quick or something. Let's get ready to hit or something that's going to encourage them in some way. And when they get to the dugout, I generally want them to encourage each other. And that's something that, honestly, we're still working on because the team that I have, they don't like to talk much to each other. And I feel like that's not such a great thing. So we're working on it. But, you know, it is a goal of mine to get them to, you know, rely on each other and talk to each other and, you know, cheer on each other. I think those are all important aspects of helping kids to stay together as a team and not in kind of feel alone or feel like they're in a clique or not part of a clique. And I think those are all parts of, you know, feeling that the team is fun.
Now, how do you deal with a situation where something happened on the field, maybe it was incorrect, and you obviously want to address it somehow, but at the same time, we were all kids and we hate to be pounded with, you know, always been told what to do constantly. How do you deal that with them when they come back into the dugout and you want to discuss something? You know, you may not be doing it every inning, but something may have happened. They missed a cutoff. I mean, we know they're going to miss cutoffs, but maybe it was the wrong cutoff situation. How do you deal with that with your kids to make them understand it and yet still keep them motivated?
Well, it depends on the situation. So if the situation is something that I feel is going to happen again in the game, then I will call them over and privately talk to them and just kind of see what they were thinking and just kind of give them a pointer here and there. If it's something that I felt was kind of a fluke, then I probably won't say anything. I'll make a note of it. I actually write it down and then I'll bring it up at the practice, the next practice that we have. And if it's something that's more of a discipline issue, I'll talk to them in private. If it's something that happens sporadically, if it's something that's consistent, then I will actually pull the player out of the game during the gameplay and have them sit out and sub them in. So it depends on what situation we're kind of talking about.
Sure. And, you know, let's take this because I love what you said. You said key words here, see what they're thinking. So you're asking them certain questions.
Yes, definitely want to know what their logic is in the decision that they made, because they might have had a really good reason for what they did, you know, for not throwing it to the cutoff guy, for example. Maybe they thought it would take too long. Maybe they thought that the whoever was playing that cut position didn't have the arm. I don't really know, and I would like to know. And before I can criticize them and say, hey, you should have done this, well, maybe he had a good reason, in which case I don't even have to say anything. I say, okay, good job. That was good thinking. And so definitely this is, again, I like communication's huge. I like to talk to my kids and find out what they're thinking and see if there's something maybe I missed, because the coach doesn't always know everything, and the coach doesn't always know. Sometimes I might miss something, and the kid saw something. So, for example, in the last game that I was coaching with my 13-year-old, batter hit the ball into the outfield. He was rounding second. I was telling him to come, and I didn't notice that the runner on third hadn't gone home. I thought he had gone home, but he didn't. And the runner didn't come because he saw the runner on third. And so these are situations where, well, I don't mm-hmm. see everything. I'm assuming right. things, but he made the right call. And initially I got mad at him when he didn't come, but then I realized, oh, this guy on third didn't go. And so then I knew to back off. And that's where, again, the coach doesn't always know everything. It's good to talk to your player. He might actually know more than you do.
You know, on our podcast here, we've mentioned many times, and I've heard you talk about it, you know, we're all in the development business, whether we're helping young kids develop into better people, baseball players, whether we're helping coaches do the same thing, whether we're helping ourselves by listening to each other. During games, you know, I know there's a fine line, but I really love giving kids, you know, responsibilities and allowing them to make decisions. I don't think we do enough of that. I want to get your opinion on it and maybe talk about a couple situations.
Are you talking about in-game responsibilities, or are you talking about
responsibilities? Let's talk about in-game. Example would be, I'll give you a quick example and we'll flow from there. You know, the catcher sees the guy, you know, at first base, very simple, leading off and taking a huge lead off, and decides he wants to call a pickoff play to first base. You know, to me, that's making kids think. Now, sometimes they may make a mistake. Well, that's life, you know, and that's how they learn from it. And that's when you talk about, you know, and like you said, you ask the questions, you know, why did you make that decision? See what their answer is. Those type of things.
Yeah, I definitely like to explain to the kids, you know, in practice, so they're aware of the situations that may come up in a game. So I kind of run through a gamut of what they can do. So at the catcher position, since you gave the catcher example, the catcher position, runner, if he doesn't fight back hard the first base, you know, you have an opportunity to pick him off. Go ahead and make the throw. I trust you. If you make a bad throw, it's okay. I trust your judgment. You know, we might have planned plays that I might also discuss in terms of having the first baseman play back behind the runner and then mm-hmm. sneak in. If the runner doesn't fight back hard the first. And these are things, again, where we kind of give them all their options. And then in the game, I don't necessarily tell them unless it's something really, really obvious and he's not seeing it. But generally speaking, again, this is part of the test to see if they are able to notice these things, if they have their own confidence in themselves to try to make the play. These are all things that I'll take notes on and we can talk about at the next practice. And unless it's something, again, something really egregious, I generally won't tell them. I'll let them decide.
What's your philosophy on base running when it comes to, you know, runners taking an extra base on their own or, you know, watching the coach? What's something that you teach when it comes to that?
My philosophy is always to go. And the team that I'm working with, the two teams that I'm working with this year, both of them are very hesitant runners, and I had to force them to go.
Yeah.
So I would tell them, first pitch, I need you to go. And if you don't, then, you know, I'm going to play you in a different position the next
exactly.
inning. And so I'm trying to get them used to running, even if they get thrown out, because I want them to learn how to run and to feel the freedom of running. And usually they don't, almost never, have been thrown out. There have been a few times, but very, very rare. And so a lot of them have had their eyes opened and say, hey, I actually can steal a base. I didn't know I could do that. And so from there, I then tell them, okay, I'm not giving you the green light. I want you to be as aggressive as you can, and you make your own decision when you can go. And they generally go as early as possible from there. So this is kind of also like a progression. First, you kind of like show them what they need to do. And then from there, they're making their own in-game decisions and in-game responsibilities. This is what I want to do. This is how I'm going to help my team get better, stay out of the force play, stay out of the double play. These kinds of things all help the team. So it's not just, you know, coach is mean and he's making me run. even though I don't want to run, but it's actually something that's going to benefit me in the future to get better, to be able to run on my own instinctively, which is better than me telling them to go, because if they have to rely on me to tell them to go, then they're still kind of like on baby food. We want them to be able to eat solids. And
love it. And I love the part when you said games are a test. And I really like that you allow some freedom with your kids. And this is why I love this podcast. We're going to continue with Rob Tong. One area I wanted to talk about was Rob Tong. In the last 14, 15 years, since you started coaching to now, what are some of the things that, and you may have quite a few, you don't have to mention them all, but give us some ideas of some things that you've changed when it comes to your coaching from when you first started to now that could really help our coaches. Maybe, it could save us, it could save them some time. So that way, because it took you so many years, it took me so many years, but for our younger coaches that are starting off, it could really save some time for them.
I love that you asked this question, Pete, because we are always learning. And if we're not evaluating what we've done in the past and whether or not we should keep doing it, then we need to start doing that. So as you know, we all learn lots of things. And if I had to pick the top ones, I'd say one of them is the attention to details. I've learned in the beginning when I first started out, we would just do ground balls, short to first, second to home, whatever, like just field it and throw it back. And I didn't care how they fielded it, didn't care how they threw it, didn't care how the receiver caught the ball. And now, in the past 5 or so years, it's been really important to me to focus on the details of what they're doing, that they're bringing the ball to center, that they're getting the ball to power in the power position to throw, that they're catching it in the right way. These are all little details, double play feeds, where they stand on the bag, the details that I didn't know in the past because I was ignorant. Like, these are things that I thought were good enough. Well, they're making the throws short to second to first, they're making the throws, but they may not be as efficient as they could be. And so now, like, that attention to detail has been a real big focus of mine, and it's really kind of eye-opening in terms of how much better they actually get in terms of doing those details. And initially I was afraid that going into the details would bore them, but it actually has not. It actually made them more curious, more attentive themselves to try to do the right thing. And so that was kind of interesting. The other thing that I've really focused on over the past few years is developing athleticism. In the past, when I first started coaching, a lot of, okay, step one is this. Step two is this. Step three is that. Okay, ready? One, two, three. And, we drill our kids to death that way, and it makes them more robotic. And they may, it may look okay in the end, but it doesn't develop that athleticism. And really, we need athletes on the baseball field. I think there's this kind of misnomer that baseball doesn't have to have a lot of athletes because you have like the Prince Fielders of the world playing first base or whatever, or the Bartolo Colon's pitching. And Bartolo Colon, to throw the way he does, very athletic. But anyway, I think that it's very important for our kids to be athletic. They can make more plays when they're athletic. They can turn a hit into an out if they're able to throw the ball on the run, for example. And if we can have them practice throwing with fluid motions and throwing on the run and throwing from different arm slots and all of that stuff, that I think is going to help them become better ball players as they get older. So that developing athleticism, pretty important to me. And then I think in general, throwing from different arm angles has been kind of something I've been focusing on a little bit more the past few years, because in the past I've always taught the kids, okay, you throw from this, high-cocked 1 o'clock position, and a lot of infielders, they don't actually throw that way very often. It's not very frequent, actually. So we're teaching them things that are not something that is very common, but we force them to do it a lot. And so I'm trying to have kids throw more from different arm angles. Again, to get them to be more athletic, but also so that they can see, maybe, you know, this position might not feel so comfortable, but, you know, if I throw from this position, hey, this feels real good. And if they try different things, again, this will help them to be better players as they experiment and learn what works and what doesn't.
Love it. You're talking to an old timer here, because I could tell you about mechanics and over mechanics, you know, starting at Mickey Owen Baseball School when I was 17 as an instructor. I mean, that's all we were taught. So, you know, it's great to see what and then hear what you're talking about, because I believe in it a lot now, which, you know, in the past I had no idea about that. But here's the other question I want to ask you. Is there a particular skill, whether it's a fundamental, you know, pitching, hitting, throwing, whatever it is, that you've changed? And what was that change you made in that particular skill, now how you teach it?
Pitching is definitely the biggest the biggest one, because I used to teach it in blocks, and I used to teach it in steps, and it was horrible. I'm really ashamed about it, but, you know, I know better now and I don't do it anymore. But I that is something that I definitely, you know, used to teach. Okay, get to that balance point, and, you know, teach balance point, because the whole pitching motion is a series of events in the kinetic chain, and you can't break down one thing in order to try to teach the pitching motion. So definitely pitching is the thing that changed the most from what I used to learn and what I know now, and I'm still learning.
So in that case, you encourage coaches to teach the complete movement, continuous movement.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. And how about the hardest thing that it's been for you as a coach to change? Something that maybe you just did a lot, and now we're all creatures of habit, and you've had a hard time changing, but you maybe you haven't changed yet, but you're working on it.
Okay, the biggest change is how I react to plays in games. I kind of wear my emotions on my sleeve, and so if a call is not made that I felt should have been made, or if a play was not made that I felt should have been made, like, you know, I hang my head, or you know, something that I shouldn't be doing. Some kind of body language that shouldn't be projected, because I want the kids to see that I'm feeling confident, that I have confidence in them, even if they mess up, even if the umpire messes up, like that everything's going to be okay. And so I'm still working on that. I'm getting a lot better at it, but that is just a personality thing for me, I suppose, where I'm trying to just make the team see that their coach feels good about them.
Fantastic. And we're getting close to the end, but I got a couple more for you, Rob. One area is something, in, you know, you've done 118 episodes, but something maybe in the last 5 to 10 episodes that kind of blew your mind away. You know, you were interviewing somebody and you said, holy Moses, I never knew that, or wow, this is really good. Because the more new things we bring out in the show, the more new things that are good, obviously, that are helping players, the more education we have. So is there something out there that really just wowed you?
Absolutely. The one where I interviewed Justin Stone and he talked about ground forces, that was tremendous. And I feel like
I heard that one.
It's not, yeah, it's not something that a lot of coaches talk about or teach. And, yeah, I mean, Justin Stone admitted as well, it's something that we're all learning. And he's learning himself. So it is something that we all want. We all know that hitting requires power, but how does that power start? Where does the power come from? And so we know, some people know that we need to generate it in the load, but then how does the load get it? And so using the ground forces, that whole interview was very, it was fantastic. And I think that in order for us to learn, we do need to talk to people who know more than us. And Justin Stone, you know, he did a great job explaining ground forces and how we can improve it. He, you know, discussed the drill progression in order to help our kids get better at it, which I'm still trying to implement. But I think that, you know, you've had guys on the show. I just listened to Perry Husband talking about, you know, velocity and effective velocity. And, you know, he was talking about how pitches that are inside seem faster than pitches outside, even if they're thrown at the same speed. you know, that was something, just listening to your podcast, that within the past few podcasts, I think it was the last podcast episode that you had, that kind of blew my mind. I was like, oh, I never really thought about that. And so, you know, this is fantastic stuff. We're in a new age of information, Pete, and you and I, hopefully we can be helping everyone get at that information.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Rob, I feel like I'm going back to school, because, you know, when you're talking to Perry Husband, you know, you really got to be educated, because he's as sharp as they come. And not just him, but a lot of guys out there. So to me, it's going back to school, trying to learn more, you know, as much as possible. Sometimes, yeah, it just blows my mind away. You know, how do you put all this stuff together? But, it, you know, it's a stepping process. It takes time. You don't throw everything all at once just because you learned it. You don't use it right away. Now, what I encourage, and I want to get this opinion from you. I encourage, you know, as I do a lot of coaching seminars around the world, I encourage coaches to learn from other coaches. Yes, I believe in that. And I've heard that said many times in seminars and on podcasts. But I also believe, as a coach, you need to be creative. You know, you need to come up with new techniques, new ideas, you know, from experience sometimes, from trial and error, or even from scientific research if you've got that background. What has Rob done lately in your in all the years you've been coaching, I know, you know, that you've developed that somebody didn't teach you, that you just you thought of it on your own, you implemented it, it works with your kids? What's out there that you can share with our audience?
Well, one thing that I did was I came up with this pitching evaluation system for games, where I had a parent chart the pitches that our pitchers threw, and I had this sheet that I just handed to them, and they just had to mark, you know, XC for a called strike, XF for a foul ball, or XS for a swing and a miss, and then an O for a ball. Very simple. And then they would do this for every batter, every pitch. And then in the end, I would get these stats on these things that I couldn't get at the time. Things like first pitch strike ratio, third pitch strike ratio, inherited runners scored, ball strike ratio, first batter out ratio, effective outs after an error, things like that. And this kind of gave me a better view of how effective the pitchers were, because at the time, like I said, nothing was out there. Now there's Game Changer that gives you ball strike rate ratio, but they don't give a lot of the other ratios that I personally am interested in. Mm-hmm. And so these are, you know, solutions that you come up with when you have a problem and there's nothing else out there. And so the only problem with it was that I had to calculate these stats for every pitcher, for every game by hand, and it would take a long time to do it.
Yeah.
It was like at least an hour or more. Very tedious. So anyway, that was something that I did, and hopefully, you know, I'm now that I know how to code, maybe I can develop an app that can do it for you or something like that. I think, you know, not necessarily for other people, but for me, for sure, I still am interested in these stats, and I don't want to have to like hand calculate all these stats.
Excellent. Rob, listen, I know it's getting late. You've been great. A couple more things. How we normally end the show is I just let open it up to our guests and say, look, there's a lot of things we talked about, and there might be something that you wanted to discuss and mention to our audience. I'll let you do that at the end. Before we do that, is there anything you do with kids on the bench? I'm curious. You know, it's, you know, you got kids on your bench that, you know, you might have four or five players on the bench. Is there anything you do to keep their attention on the bench, to keep them in the game? Any advice for our coaches out there?
You know, I've had guests come on the show, and again, people smarter than me, who tell me their ideas, and they're fabulous ideas. There are things like keep track of how many seconds the pitcher takes in order to throw his pitch to home plate. Mm-hmm. How fast is the throw back from the catcher to second base? How many looks does he give from the pitcher to a runner at second when he's trying to hold the runner on? And different kinds of things that players can chart on the bench and kind of keep them engaged. I don't unfortunately do that because I just am scatterbrained and I have like lots of other things that I'm doing. I don't have many assistants on either team that I was coaching. And so those are things I don't really do, but I should do. And those are definitely things that any coach can do if they print out a sheet and they give it to some kid on the bench before every game. And I think that That would be fabulous, because that's all information that you can share with the team. It can help you right then and there in that game. And unfortunately, I'm kind of not very good at doing that.
Well, Rob, one of the reasons I brought you on the show, which I love about this part, is that I knew that you weren't going to give all the advice, but you have so much of it also from your shows. And that's what I was trying to get out of you. So, yeah, bringing those items up that you learned from other shows helps our show, helps our coaches, our parents, and our players. I think that's great. Lastly, there's a thousand things, but something very important to you that you want to mention to our coaches, players, and parents when it comes to coaching young kids or coaching players in general. Go ahead. It's your time, and then we'll finish.
Well, I think for coaches, I would say I would suggest that you evaluate players in tryouts not just based on their physical skills, but like we mentioned earlier, there are other things that make up the player in the game, things like mental toughness and the desire to be a playmaker, whether or not they're a good teammate. These are things that you're not going to see in a tryout unless you actually try to look for it. So I would suggest for coaches, when you do have tryouts, there's nothing worse on a team than a cancerous player, somebody who's, you know, just a jerk to his teammates, who doesn't want to make plays. You know, here, you make the play. Things like that that you could probably evaluate during your tryout. Something like, you know, put him in a competitive situation in your tryout, give him some adversity, see how he handles it. You know, how does he react? I think if you can find some way, and I'm sure smarter people can come up with other ways to try to evaluate these things in a tryout. If you can do that, then you will have, I think, a more enjoyable roster to coach. And as for everyone else, I think that the best thing for you to keep in mind is that you are the combination of everything you have heard and seen about coaching. So be careful who you follow, because you want to make sure that the people who you're listening to and filling your mind with coaching information, that they're actually telling you stuff that's not misinformation. And there are even big names out there that can teach misinformation. And there's one guy who, if I were to mention his name, Pete, you would know who he is. You know, he's talking about, for example, when you have a player who doesn't, you know, who's sitting on the bench, you know, well, just tell him, just keep working harder, because that's how you're going to get back into the starting lineup. And it makes for, you know, this great Twitter soundbite or whatever tweet. But in real life, those kids, it's not always that black and white. Like, some of these kids, they just don't have the time to work that much harder. They have other things that they're doing. They're getting ready for college. They may not have the finances to go spend on a personal trainer or a strength trainer or whatever to get better. Like, we don't know. So we can't just make this blanket statement that sounds great on Twitter, but you have to be able to filter through the misinformation. Be careful who you follow, but be aware that everything that you see and hear goes into your brain, and that becomes who you become as a coach. So if you want to be the best coach that you can be, make sure you follow the right people, listen to the right things. And, you know, I'm not trying to overly promote your show, but Pete, you have a ton of great guests. People who are listening to this podcast can just pick up so much from this podcast. And, you know, all the names have already been filtered. Pete knows all these great people. He knows the good people from the bad people. And so, you know, these are the people who you want to listen to and make yourself a better coach with.
Fantastic, Rob. I love it. And, you know, folks, you got both of us. You got a lot of other guys out there, but you got both of us. Utilize us. Send us emails. Check us out. You know, ask us questions. We'll help you as much as we can. Go to Rob's website, youthbaseballedge.com. You can check it out. He's got a blog. His podcasts are on there. He's got resources. He's accessible. Understand, I want everybody to understand this. Rob had no idea what questions I was going to ask him. That's how great a job he did on this podcast. It went outstanding. Not only that, but he's got, you know, he's got a job, he's got a family, he's got seven. Four kids, I believe. Seven kids. Wow, we didn't even get into that part. You know, think about that. Seven kids, and He's doing a podcast on his own, so support him. Go to the website. You can actually support him. There's a page there where you can help him out. You can, you know, obviously he's got a lot of followers, but he could use more. Rob, listen, this has been awesome, man. Loved it. Hopefully I'll have you back again. Keep doing what you're doing, and we'll work together and hoping, you know, help coaches and players and parents as best we can.
It is an honor to be here, especially since I'm not an Italian. But thanks for having me on the show anyway. Yeah.
And, that's all right. We can work on that.
For sure. All right.
we have honorary Italians. Right, Don't worry about that. All right, folks. That was Rob Tong from the Youth Baseball Edge, youthbaseballedge.com. At Edgy Baseball, EDGY Baseball. Thank you for everybody for listening to the show. I know we went a little over, but this was important. I felt like I got a lot out of it. Check us out on our social media. I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Baseball Out on our website, on our Baseball Out website, also on our Facebook and Twitter. Any questions, email me at petercaliendo@att.net. All of Rob's information will be on our show notes. Special thanks to Brian Crock, our producer on the other side of the window. From the Lineup Media Group. Again, great thanks to Rob Pong from the Youth Baseball Podcast, their host and also a coach. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. I want to wish you a great coaching day, and I will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.